You know what I would really like is if you're listening to this and you enjoy the show, if you would consider leaving a review in iTunes or your platform of choice, especially iTunes with a 5-star rating and some words about why you like the show. We would really appreciate that. We try not to ask too often, but it helps other people find the show. And as far as I know, this is really one of the only price-oriented podcasts that's aiming to talk to traders and talk amongst traders, typically with Josh and I. So if you enjoy it, I hope that you'll give us a rating in iTunes. We'd super appreciate that. Hey, this episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Brave New Coin. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check it out. I've been talking about BNC Pro for quite some time. BNC Pro helps you manage your crypto activities. It's a secure and unified suite of applications that allow you to chart, research, screen, analyze, and optimize your crypto portfolio holdings. It really is a terminal-like experience. There's all kinds of different screens that you can check out. It's completely free to try, and there are some paid features that you can unlock for a low, low price. And I think that you'll really like it if you check it out. You just got to go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to see BNC Pro today. Try it for free. Thanks so much. All right, here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I am here as nearly always, I guess, these days. We haven't done an interview in a while. Josh Olswich, it's great to see you.
We're interviewing each other, Brian. We are. Deeply searching into each other's trading psyche as we discuss the news right. And charts, you know?
Well, my trading psyche is pretty shallow at the moment. Not many deep rabbit holes to go down. Yeah, so, you know, there's stuff happening in the land.
I feel like World War III just ended, like just right of World War III. And now all of a sudden we have this other thing that's just now, immediately in the world conscious, you know?
Yeah, what is that video game that people talk about that was all about disease and...
Oh, I should know this. I'm blanking on the name.
Resident Evil?
No. People are going to roast us. For this. I can't remember. I can't remember the name either.
I know nothing about gaming.
I never actually played it. Contagion?
Was World War Z about disease or was that about war?
You didn't see it?
I did, but I don't remember it. It was obviously not very good.
No, I think it was a virus.
There we go. It's World War Z now. We're done with World War III. We're on to World War Z.
Well, look, I'm not going to get in the weeds about this, but my background is biotechnology, so
oh snap!
So seeing this come out to light again, like I think most of us were alive enough to remember SARS and how that went down,
yeah,
and how serious that was. It's looking like SARS is a bit more, or this is a bit more serious than SARS, the Wuhan coronavirus stuff. Yeah, it just doesn't look good. You can't trust anything coming out of China as far as numbers and infected and deaths. And now it's in the U.S.
Yeah, so if they're talking about certain numbers, then unfortunately, because the way China has done PR historically, like no one trusts these numbers. So they just 10x them in their brain, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, who really knows, honestly?
Well, this is not a podcast about... viruses, unless they're coming from Pompliano.
The virus is spreading with the wrong virus. Yeah, no, you're right.
The wrong virus is spreading. But, you know, nevertheless, it is affecting markets, whether we want to say it or not. Like, if you follow the 5-minute chart of legacy indexes, it's affecting that. And legacy indexes affect everything else. So, you know, we're seeing it make adjustments to the way, like, gold is trading and therefore, you know, Bitcoin's tagging along in some of those moves.
Yeah, as soon as it was announced that there was an infected in the US, I think the S&P dropped like 200 points or something.
Yeah. So how do you pronounce it? Coronavirus?
Right, like the beer, yeah.
Yeah, so no coronavirus in Davos. Davos?
It's Davos, I think.
So we want to talk a little bit about Davos because, you know, all the hip kids, I feel like the crypto people that go to Davos, they're like the real hangers on, you know, like the fifth wheel effect of you know, financial people and global bankers and all the billionaires in Davos. And it's like, oh, there's Brad Garlinghouse. So we got to avoid that guy or, you know, whatever crypto people are making their way there. But there's some news.
It's funny to see the pivoting of people being like an expert on Iran to an expert on like the trade war to an expert on coronaviruses. And then like the Davos thing, like people are an expert on like huge economic, you know, whatever impacts of things. I don't know, it's just super
clearly
fun.
If you tweet, and certainly if you have Twitter followers, you have expertise on any subject, any component of conversation that may come up in a cocktail party. You can talk about all of it. But there is some news out of Davos. So I haven't seen a ton of stuff out of the normal. But I listened to an interview with Ray Dalio. He's in Davos, and everybody kind of knows who Ray Dalio is. Bridgewater, gigantic hedge fund, global macro guy. The title on this little 5-minute interview, which actually was pretty good content coming out of CNBC, surprisingly, was cash is trash was what he said. But he was really trying to prevent like a headline that was like calling him a mega gold bull or something like that, or saying like he's bearish on indexes. But I kind of garnered, and they asked him about Bitcoin too. I don't know if you saw the video, but the takeaway I had was that he's just kind of bearish on the dollar, because essentially he's saying all of the stuff going on is going to end in money printing. So in terms of how people get out of, you know, so therefore calling for inflation, which is bullish Bitcoin, but he was very, very hesitant to be bullish Bitcoin, but not because he wasn't like, I hate it. He was just saying it was too volatile to be the type of store of value that he was considering. Anyway, did you listen to it? You have any thoughts on it?
I did listen to it. The first thing that struck me is he seemed tired. I don't know if it was like a jet lag thing or something, but he seemed
tired,
a little
or
like,
tired of the media, like knowing I say something and then there's like 100 headlines that misconstrue it.
He was definitely careful with his words for sure. But yeah, I mean, he was talking about hard money basically, and that we're printing too much and we keep printing, and negative interest rates, zero interest rates. And I think all crypto people agree with his sentiment about, you know, equities being riskier and riskier the more we go up, and like, where's this house of cards going to come down eventually? You know, stairway up, elevator down. That's true in equities as much as it is in crypto. So,
his Big Debt Market Cycles book is one of the greatest books I've read. It provides these templates for the types of recessions that can occur, and you know, how markets change over time. And he broke them down. The two categories he has in that book are basically a deflationary cycle and an inflationary cycle. And I think maybe I don't understand it, but what I found interesting is it sounds like he sees, even if it starts as deflationary, you know, like maybe dollars are okay for a while, because, you know, if equities are going down and all that stuff. But it sounds to me like he sees the end result being lots and lots of money printing and a threat of inflation, which during the last cycle, everybody expected that as well, but then it just never really materialized, right? So at least in the way the numbers are calculated by governments, like real inflation and stuff.
Have you seen this Fed repo operations chart?
Oh God, I'm sure it's vertical.
I'll send it to you, and we should post it on the article. But it's just crazy, like how, I don't know enough. I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert on the repo market, but I've asked people in the Treasury, and they're like, we don't honestly know what's going on here. Like, I don't think anybody knows why the repo market is as disconnected and broken as it is. But it's like there's an emergency every day, every week, like with the repo market. And I don't know enough. But anytime like a Bitcoiner talks about the repo market, you have like Joe Wiesenthal saying, this isn't QE or some, you know, standard toe-the-line.
Not QE, QE.
Right. So who really knows what's going on here? But just like face value, it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
To me, it's just like,
I'll put this chart in the show notes, even though it disturbs me, because it comes from Sven Henrik, who he's like a meme of FinTwit. Like, he is constantly bearish. Like, he's just bearish all the way up, just drawing his wedge. You know, like altcoins, people draw wedges. Yeah. He's the ascending wedge guy. It's like he just keeps drawing ascending wedges on equity markets. And then, like, every time his trend line gets broken, he's like, update, and the trend line's broken. And then it just keeps going up after that. And he has to redraw it with a new trend line. He just does it for years and years. But yeah, that doesn't take away the value of this chart, and that eventually someone like bearish Sven will be right, but they were early.
Yeah, years early. Well, the thing that, like, obviously this isn't an equities podcast, but the reason why it's important is because Bitcoin's only existed in a bullish equities market. You know, it's since 2008, we've been mega bull. So the real true test for Bitcoin is going to be this, if this stuff like drops 50% or something ridiculous, you know, like, yeah, what happens to crypto, you know?
Yeah. What do people value most? Do they value dollars? Do they value, you know, gold or Bitcoin or something that's not a dollar? I don't know. I don't know that the public understands enough about like printing money and what tools we've used to get out of these situations. Because last time the consequences didn't occur. Like, when was the last time the United States had significant inflation? It was like the late 70s, right? So I tend to think that people are still going to want dollars until inflation starts to rear its head, which maybe it's not like in the initial parts of a downturn, you know? Like, maybe we really don't start seeing the effects of inflation until after we've seen some significant drops in these things where dollars are pretty valuable at first.
I mean, for the crypto perspective, if halving is an effect, you know, if this happens post halving, which it probably will, I don't think we're going down anytime soon, but if we drop significantly in equities, US equities, like post halving, and the perception is there that Bitcoin is like this hard money and it's an option, like, I think that's all we need. I don't think we need like the masses to be super educated about crypto, but I think people need to think that Bitcoin is safe haven, you know?
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about that is we've seen proof that Bitcoin can move really, really rapidly relative to other assets that just take a lot more money to push around.
Yeah, so, there's not a lot of float. There's not a lot of free.
Yeah, it's like a
free,
low float
stock, you know?
Yeah. So if gold all time highs are on the way, in my opinion, it would lead also to Bitcoin all time highs, and potentially a significantly higher surge in Bitcoin than what you would get in gold. I agree. There's a lot of bullish potential in that scenario, but I have a hard time thinking, and you know, historically, like certainly gold miners, I think gold as well, like they don't necessarily outperform significantly at the beginning of a recession, but as you like, everybody just flies to cash at first trying to get out of everything, gain liquidity, but then as the market bottoms, that when they say, what am I going to get back into? Well, stock-wise, maybe they get into more value stocks, and then maybe, you know, and then they get into more risk-off asset classes like gold and gold miners or whatever. So maybe Bitcoin falls into that. Like, if we hit recession, maybe Bitcoin tanks along with everything else as people just try to get to cash, and then it responds positively from there. I don't know. Either way, it'll be hard to trade in my guess, except for people who have patience and discipline, I'll put it that way.
And we're in a U.S. election year, so like there's that monkey wrench in there as well. Like, imagine if Trump loses and then the market tanks based on Trumpian policies, but during a Democratic presidency. Then he goes out there, like, does his rallies and says, look what these socialists did and all this other stuff. Like, that would just be the perfect setup. Like, because he just loves his rallies. So like, if he's just running for office in perpetuity, that's his dream, you know, like rally after rally.
Man,
I think that's the ultimate nightmare. Like, as much as I don't want Trump to be reelected, like him losing and having these rallies and being on Fox News every day, it's just going to be so brutal. So brutal.
Yeah. So, I mean, historically, election years can be rocky. the uncertainty of an election in traditional markets. I do think he's probably priced in terms of being reelected. Like all the prediction markets have him heavily favored.
Yeah.
And especially if the Democratic candidate is like a Bernie type of person and somehow then wins the general, like that would be the type of thing that it would not be priced into the market. And we could see a severe downturn as the result of the election if a Bernie or Elizabeth Warren type of person were elected. That'd be fascinating.
Right. I can see the tweet now. It's like whatever, who's ever elected, and then like they cause this downturn in the market immediately. Oh, yeah. You know,
Trump, the day after the election, Trump would be saying something like, I hope y'all are ready for a depression.
Yeah. It'd be doom and gloom immediately, for sure.
Yeah. All the way until he's booted out of the White House in January. I don't know which sounds worse, to be honest. They both sound terrible.
It's just going to be max chaos, I think.
Max chaos. And, you know, when World War III was still here and pre-World War Z, when I was talking about Bitcoin correlations, because that's what we're all still trying to figure out and what we've been talking about here so far. I quipped about how I think Bitcoin was just correlated to chaos more than anything else. Because all the other correlations have just broken down. Like for every time they're like tightly correlated to the yuan or gold or stocks, then it flips the opposite way. But it seems like the correlation to chaos seems to be pretty consistent. So we definitely have chaos.
If you look at the election night, Trump's election win, which wasn't priced in, and how Bitcoin reacted to that, for sure. Like Bitcoin did really well that day. I remember like we had a bullish TK recross on the daily or the 12-hour, I think. Like I can see it in my mind. I just don't remember where we are on the time frames of the chart, but it was very bullish for crypto.
Yeah. Do you think to put a bow on China, the coronavirus or the Chinese New Year, Arthur from BitMEX tweeted about how volumes are about to die off because of the New Year, but now also mix in the virus stuff with that. Do you think that we're going to see negative effects due to stuff going on in China play into the crypto markets?
I feel like the chop has picked up. I don't know if that's just where we are at on the chart or what's going on around the world, but I don't know. I feel like the BARTs are back for the first time in months.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And just like the weird price action where it's just super violent, whipsaw over and over again. Like if I look at the ETH chart, especially in the hourly, it is just super all over the place. Really, really high percentage swings, like mostly down, but just all over the place. So I don't know. That seems... Yeah. Maybe it's just like because we're living it, and I don't know. It's anecdotal or whatever.
I don't like anything I see from price action perspective, and we'll dig into price. But I guess none of that China stuff is particularly bullish for Bitcoin. We could probably agree on that.
Yeah,
it's still a significant part of the market.
I haven't really heard anybody talk about this yet, but hopefully all this stuff is under wraps by July because that's in the Olympics in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And
didn't even think about that.
That's going to be an issue, but it hopefully should be figured
out. With your biotech background, is it the type of thing that can be like not away, but, you know, kind of figured out in a matter of weeks? Or is it the type of thing that could take months to kind of figure out how to handle it?
No, it'll definitely take months for sure. Mm, and I mean, it depends on who's working on it and where, but the fact that it's so... virulent and so contagious makes it super dangerous to work with. So it's going to have to be, you know, there's all these conspiracy theories about this lab. There's this special, it's called the BSL-4 lab, which is ultra secure from a organism perspective. So if you think about the movies where it's like negative pressure room and like, you know, all these masks and special gear you have to wear to get in and out. Like this is the type of lab that the BSL-4 labs are. And there was only like 50 of them in the world. And it's about 20 miles from the market in Wuhan, where they think this came from. Like, of course, there's all these conspiracy theories about that. And yeah, it's interesting. But if it did come from a place like that, DNA wise, we'll be able to like figure that out, I'm pretty sure. Wow. From a genetic code perspective. But anyway.
Well, sounds like that'll be a story for a while then, if that's the case. And then also on the Davos thing, we want to talk a little bit about Ripple teasing an IPO, but before that, was there anything else out of Davos that you had interest in or checked out?
I feel like there was more crypto stuff other years than this year. Like, I didn't hear too much. I don't know. I know CoinDesk is there, but I haven't really seen anything substantial come from them about Davos, but I haven't really been following it closely. But yeah, I haven't really seen anything. Like, there were a few like random rooms that I saw like half full for like crypto stuff, but nothing significant.
Yeah. All right. So Ripple IPO, this came from Brad Garlinghouse kind of hinting towards it in a interview while he was there that Ripple could have a IPO sometime in the next 12 months because they really need to raise more money, which is the point of an IPO. They don't get enough money from dumping all over their believers or making equity rounds. What did you say they just raised recently?
So they raised $200 million at the end of December.
Just a month ago.
From a Series C.
Okay, so they had a Series C of $200 million a month ago.
Yeah.
And now they're talking about an IPO in the next 12 months.
They're talking about an IPO. And then there's also this case that there's a couple of class actions for Ripple being an unregistered security or whatever. But this one in particular, I'll send you the link. It just happened last week where they're trying to move to a motion to dismiss this case. And they're basically arguing that it's over the 3-year statute of limitations or whatever the term is, but not that it isn't a security. So super interesting, depending on how the judge decides. This is in California.
So it's a bit of a limp defense.
Yeah, it's legalese, I guess you could say, but they're not saying like it's not a security. They're just saying it's past the statute of limitations or whatever.
Could that be a similar result to what Ethereum was, like where the SEC commissioner said, well, maybe it was a security, but it grew out of one, or it's been long enough? Or,
well, I think the key difference here is that Ripple, like you said, is constantly dumping on people. And
it's not decentralized itself to the degree that Ethereum has, even though Ethereum is still somewhat centralized.
The like doublespeak and lying that the Ripple people put out there is just astonishing to me, because clearly, yeah, they escrowed 50 billion tokens, but who's benefiting from the sale of those tokens? Ripple directly. Like, obviously, it's on their Q4 or their quarterly reports. So it's like they control the supply still. It's just stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they blow my mind. The whole thing with Ripple. I think if I, in a best case scenario to me would be if it just kind of segregates itself from what we think of as crypto, like not just is no longer in the same conversation as when we talk about Bitcoin or even Ethereum and other projects like that. Like, just go ahead and put it in a different wagon of corporate fleecing of retail investors and not in the conversation about what crypto is, because Ripple makes no sense to me, and I'm 100% with you on the whole thing.
Yeah, and then if it's working for I'm blanking on the word again. If it's working for cross-border transactions, great. You know, but it doesn't need a token, and they certainly don't need repeated raises and an IPO. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, that's unbelievable to me. But whatever. People keep buying their stuff. Let's dig into price then. You talked about the BART being back and some general chop. The only major thing I noticed that we have talked about recently was that, we were talking about pushing up into the 200-day moving average. That was my kind of key metric. We've had a pretty clear rejection off of that from the way I look at it. You responded to me when I mentioned it on Twitter that imagine looking at the SMA, not the EMA. So tell me where we're at with the 200-day EMA. Because you still say that we're high time frame bullish, correct?
Right. So the 200 is at 82 on the daily on Stamp.
So basically we've retested that.
Yeah.
In your mind.
Sure. So for me, there's two key charts right now. The first chart is the Tether price versus Bitcoin. Right now, we're in the longest period of Tether below a dollar since January to March. Like, we haven't been this solidly below a dollar on Tether since that period. And that was when, that was the massive ascending triangle we were forming or whatever at that time. And I stand by the belief that as long as Tether's below a dollar, the market sentiment is bearish. So until evidence is provided me otherwise, like, that's going to be what I'm thinking about. And the second chart is the Pitchfork and Cloud. So if you compare this to, again, the ascending triangle accumulation from November to March, very similar thing where we made this pattern at the bottom of the Pitchfork, moved into the Cloud, and then broke the 200 off to the races we were to the other end of the Pitchfork. So we still have probably a couple of days on this this Cloud, and we're definitely not out of the woods yet as far as being above or below it. Like, we're inside it now, which is another reason why we're seeing so much chop. There's no clear trend direction. It's very indeterminate.
Yeah, that's where I kind of end up, is like, I just don't think we're going to go anywhere very fast outside of like major world news and stuff that, you know, does something like we did with China blockchain 40% in 2 days type of stuff. I flipped my moving averages from SMA to EMA, and indeed we got rejected off the 200-day SMA, supported by the 200-day EMA. Historically, you and I have talked about actually when those cross, which is totally just kind of, it's just a random thing, but still it's like a very slow moving average cross, I guess, is how you would dictate that. But squeezing between the two for some time would be totally sensible to me. And if that's the case, like if we're not like blasting off or totally melting down, it continues to have an opportunity for alts, according to your thesis, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, to the MAEMA point, there's a decent signal for the 100-100 cross. So the 100 MA.
It was the 100 that we talked about, not the 200?
I think it's the 100, yeah.
Yeah, the 200 just wouldn't cross very often at all.
No, it's like the 100 SMA and the 100 EMA or something. 100 MA, 100 SMA, so whatever it is.
Yeah.
But that's a super interesting signal if you look back at that historically. What was the other thing you just said? Sorry.
Just the potential to continue sideways between these two 200s or indeterminate cloud, you know, just kind of no man's land for a while, which could potentially lead to more altcoin action as the market settles down.
Right. I mean, we have having in late April, early May, and if this BCH 12.5% tax per block gets passed, I can see miners switching to BTC, sorry, it's BCH tax. So they're going to switch their hash rate to BSV or BTC if they disagree with this tax, and that's going to speed up hash rate on BTC, and halving is going to come quicker. So like all this stuff is happening. So that's important to think about and consider as far as...
Because those three still use the same protocols that apply to miners, so they can choose to mine whichever one.
The same algo, yeah. It should all be SHA-256. But so if you're in the we go sideways into halving camp, it's better for alts, yes. If you're into the we explode after halving camp, you have to pay attention to hash rate here and how this BCH tax shakes out as far as mining is concerned. So there's a lot of moving parts here for sure, but if I'm just looking at technicals, what I'm thinking is we're in a good spot for local bottom for the year. The worst case scenario is we twist bullish on the cloud and then drop through the Kumo twist and through the Pitchfork. Like, then it's who knows territory. Like, we're in uncharted territory at that point.
Crypto moves quickly, and it's important that we keep up. We need enhanced tools to deliver quick insights, snapshots of our asset positions, the latest news and flexibility for tracking our portfolios, whether it's a personal portfolio, a fund, a bot, or all of the above. BNC Pro helps you with all of it. Trades auto update from your linked exchanges, saving you time and ensuring accuracy. You can tag and filter your holdings to suit your strategy, and you can even create custom holdings, whether they're through OTC exchanges or brand new assets that aren't even on the market yet, which is really cool. BNC Pro is the terminal-like experience you've always wanted, and now it's at your fingertips. Try BNC Pro today at ledgerstatus.com/BNC, and thanks so much for the team at Brave New Coin for being Ledger Status Partner. Tell me what you've got going on in alts land, Josh's alts portfolio.
Yeah, I guess this was last week. We didn't talk last week, but so the Zcash 2x on a double, or I sold half on a double
for Zcash 2x, first of all. So bravo. Not many people can say that.
And you made fun of me for saying I caught the bottom, but I did, in fact, catch the bottom.
You did.
So you can
never again say that Zcash has never been above the 200-day moving average. That line is gone from your repertoire.
Right, for the first time ever. It's above the 200, and it's ranging above the 200 now. So it's a new era for Zcash, definitely.
Carpe Zcash is on the case.
Yeah, and it actually doesn't look great, but ETC, BTC looks okay still up here, even at this insane level. So I rolled that winnings into ADA, which is in this insanely tight accumulation zone for the past 6 months plus, I think. Yeah, it's a nearly 200-day accumulation. It's pushing up on the weekly B bands, which are super tight. I don't know. I hate ADA. I obviously hate Zcash, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to call a duck and roll with the punches, you know?
So you're going to play the same game this round as you did with Zcash and take the chance on something you don't like.
Yeah, and I think it has a chance for an easy 2x. I think an immediate 50% at least, and a 2x. Wow. If things are good market-wide, it has a good chance for a 2x. Just even based on like the rotation theory, like I can see people rotating out of stuff just like I am and into stuff that hasn't moved yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm super bullish on it. I have a position. I have a double position now because I actually bought an initial position December 3rd. But so I'm ready. Nice. Are you in ADA? What do you think about alts right now? Any that catch your eye?
I like the look of some of the alts that I see so far. So it's the hit or miss in that rotation is something I've just not been paying close enough attention to the markets. I took a different track than you, which so far is not working for the record. ENG dropped out of the level that I was most keen on seeing it keep, and quickly, like I assumed, went down to the 200-day moving average and kind of very close to going back to jail. So my strategy of taking less risk, or like taking fewer alts that I was had interested positions in, rather than spreading it out. So far, I'm taking the blunt end of that one. And to be honest, though, I still kind of have the same feeling that I'm not a believer across the board, like spreading it out 10, 20 positions. But I think if you can do what you just did, where you take that, you take a targeted look at something like Zcash and you are able to roll it into ADA, you can get some positive momentum going that route, but you have to manage those pretty tightly. And, to be frank, I don't really want to manage anything very tightly right now. Like I just kind of want to let some roll that I have a little bit of fundamental comfort in, but you don't have fundamental comfort in anything. So therefore you just let them all roll technically.
I disagree on the tight management. Like I saw something go up 100%, so I sold half of it to free roll, and that's it. Like I don't care what it is. It could be like pickup sticks. I don't care, you know. As long as it 2x. At this point, I'm still holding Zcash. So if it goes to infinity, great. But
if it goes to zero, you don't care either.
I don't care. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, right? So at this point, yeah. there are fewer alts that haven't moved that look good, I think, than that have moved. So back to the rotation game, like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I was looking at Tezos as well. I wanted to re-enter Tezos. I had gotten out on that first big move up that it went into the 20K, so like 24, something like that. Me and the kids got out above 20K, maybe like 21, I can't remember. And then I just kind of ignored it, waited to see what would happen. And it went all the way down to like 15. And I initially was looking at 16 or 17 to think potential re-entry. It was another one, though, where it wasn't quite back to like the previous horizontal levels, but it was at a reasonable place for a bounce. And I didn't time it quite right. And then I looked at it and it's like 7% up in a day. And I didn't want to chase into that type of a daily. But I still have got my eye on Tezos as a place where I might be able to be interested in taking some risk. Although in that scenario, like, I think the potential for a double is not as good. Yeah. As some of these other altcoins, like you mentioned, like ADA is still a really big cap. So I think the potential for ADA to double is a little less than some of the others. But like so many of those that have similar looks to ADA, Zcash, all the ones we've covered before, the path to 50%, 100% up is just not an extreme move relative to how freaking dumped they got. And that's my biggest pain point with Tezos, even though there's a lot of hype and interest around Tezos. And it had a local level that I was interested in. I couldn't convince myself to make that push.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a rotation game again. Like, why are you hoping to go 2x on something that already is up 150% since lows in October? Not you specifically, but just in general.
Yeah.
So yeah,
dear trader,
it can go up. People are super bullish on it. There's so many people talking about Tezos all the time. But yeah, I'm just looking at charts, you know, who am I?
I think you made a good move so far. I don't even have an update on some of the other ones that I was interested in looking at, like ZRX. I know it got into the buy zone for me, but I didn't pull the trigger there either. Again, this is part. I think I have some complacency right now, Josh. I think that's what I'm getting at here. I have a little bit of complacency in my trading game at the moment. I've had a lot of personal stuff I've been looking at, and haven't paid enough attention to the market. So, probably means everything's just going to pump together, except for whatever I'm holding, because that's always how it feels, you know, that emotional game.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't beat yourself too much about it. You know,
there's always another trade.
And so another trade.
I've been trying to remind myself of that. LTC was one that recaptured a level around 0.006 that I had. It like dipped under it and went quickly to 0.0055. I've had that level marked since it first made it in last September. And dipping below it and then recapturing it, went as high as the 200 day, and now it's dipping off of that. That's one where I think LTC and that look in general, I think, has some potential. And Monero was another one that I've had on my list. You know, these are pretty boring altcoins. They're like old school alts. It's not the new hotness. Monero had a 2200 cross, so it's been ranging around the 20-day moving average, but it is hovering just over the 200-day, made higher lows, that kind of stuff. Super fascinating look. And on this current daily we're on, today's Friday, whatever, January 24th, it went well below the 200 and recaptured the whole thing in the same daily. So it's got a really nice wick right now. So like Monero is one that really interests me. Like I would feel comfortable entering that with some stops below local lows. And ZRX.
You're speaking my language.
Yeah. ZRX, it did. It created a bottom, but it was false and then came in with volume and kind of recaptured the level that it broke down from. That's the type of thing that looks really bullish to me. So I still think there's optimism. I don't know. I'm not quite there yet. I haven't pulled the trigger on additional exposure than the limited alt exposure that I already have.
Well, all these charts on the Daily Cloud, it's the same story. It's in 2 weeks, we will know very clearly how bullish we are.
If price goes up towards the Kijun, or if the Kijun comes down towards the price?
Well, no, like they're all setting up for a bullish Kumo twist.
Oh, the whole, after, I see. They made the initial move, and now the cloud's about to twist and see if it breaks up above.
Right. So after being down for 200 plus days, everything's finally sort of reversing, you know, the pendulum is swinging in the other direction.
Well, since I kind of trust Arthur on this whole limited volatility Chinese New Year thing, and price-wise, my bias is that way as well on Bitcoin. All that leads me to say that we're in a ripe opportunity again for altcoins to make that type of move after most of them have either had a retrace or consolidation at the least over the past few weeks. So, that makes me, I guess that makes me bullish alts, and I need to get my head back in the game, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we'll know in 2 weeks. Wait and see. That's all I can keep, like, when I keep looking at these charts, that's all I see, the same thing, the same story. It's like,
Well, we'll have an update on that next week to see where we're at. Maybe I'll have made a trade by then. And then, you know, I said our goal was 52 podcasts in 52 weeks, and I already missed one. It was totally my fault because I was traveling, and I said, hey, what if we do it this night? And you said, that's fine, and I did not. But we're going to make that up. We're going to have one of these weeks where we just hit people with two podcasts, and you listeners, you're going to enjoy it, especially those of you that are here with us 40 minutes in.
Ba-bam.
That said, you've written some articles over the past couple of weeks. Bullish on Brave, maybe on Bat. You got to separate those two, I guess, don't you?
Well, similar to Ripple and Stellar, like there's a circulation problem with all of these as far as the amount of token just floating around. With Brave, it's 1.5 billion. So it's even more than Ripple, even more than Stellar. So it's hard to believe, it's hard to just imagine a world where there's a massive store of value potential there. Like, yeah, it's a great medium of exchange, but I don't see it like mooning anytime soon.
Yeah.
Unless there's massively more publishers and users, and that, I just don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, Bat's just one of those where the product side of things seems so interesting. It seems like it's a pretty decently run company, all that. In the midst, by the way, like growing all these users and stuff on Brave, and Mozilla just laid off a ton of staff, like over 100 people, I think. I think Brave has a lot of potential, and therefore maybe Bat has an edge there. But I agree with you. It's been range bound ever since it's existed, and it just doesn't seem like there's the motivation or the justification for pumping the token in a significant way. So we'll have to see what comes of that. I don't know. I get emails every now and then. It's like, hey, you have 10 Bat, and I'm like, okay, what's that? Like a dollar, 50 cents.
similar to Ripple, like there's constant airdrops, right? They're constantly slow dripping the supply to publishers or creators or whoever.
Yeah, so a publisher like me would just be like, okay, good. I'm going to go sell it.
Right. You're either going to hold it and forget about it, or you're going to sell it. You're not going to be like, oh, this is going to go to infinity, you know? No.
Your other two articles were about XLM and XRP, and honestly, they're two that, God bless you for writing those, Josh, because I know there's an audience for them. I just don't know that I'm the audience. Do you enjoy writing about something and kind of subtly bashing it the whole article?
I do enjoy that because, especially Ripple, you know, like I enjoy...
You're educating the masses. They come to you looking for hopium, and then you just shoot their dreams down.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's facts. I'm bringing facts. It's not like I'm...
You're just bringing facts.
I'm just stating what's happening, you know? So it's like, if people don't know, I said this in a video, but if you buy Ripple not knowing that they're constantly dumping on you, then there's a problem. But if you buy knowing they're constantly dumping on you, then that's fine. You know, you're an informed investor and you made that decision.
So that's your choice.
That's your choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also wrote about Maker last week, and I'm probably not going to write about Maker for a long time. mainly because a lot of the stats are kind of a black box right now, and the Psy-Dy thing. The Psy-Dy thing is being figured out still from a metrics standpoint, and it's kind of a nightmare for people like Coinmetrics to like put that information together. So that's going to take some time to figure out what's going on there. But they did have their they're at their ceiling, 100 million Psy, what die, whatever it is. Anyway, there's a lot of it out there floating around, so it's definitely being used. But the Maker token itself doesn't look particularly bullish.
Every time I look at it, it seems really more illiquid than I thought it would be.
Well, it's not really traded anywhere. It's definitely a security. Exchanges are treating it as a security. It's not listed anywhere except like Bitfinex, you know? So
maybe that's why. Maybe it was, I was looking at it on Bitfinex and they just don't have a lot of liquidity in general. Unless your name's Joe, then endless millions and millions of dollars on the market.
I was just looking at hash rate. We're getting another plus 5% predicted. So we hit like a plus 7, a plus 6. So hash rate just keeps increasing. Halving's going to come sooner and sooner.
Yeah. Well, let's leave it there. A couple of things I want to note, though. Brave New Coin's been writing some good stuff, your price analysis, but then also they've got some other news out there reporting on Grayscale, our friends Barry and fam, reporting another record year, something I didn't know. Y'all are also covering this whole NBA story, the guy with the contract trying to tokenize his contract. The NBA wouldn't let him do it, but he took a payout, an early payout, so he took a haircut on the contract itself so that he just had the money, and then he kind of self-tokenized it, so that was interesting. So some NBA players trying to get into the, I don't know, tokenizing of assets. And then some other just, I don't know, it's been some good news on old Brave New Coin lately, and we're thankful for them and being our podcast partner. And if you're not using BNC Pro, then you get over to ledgerstatus.com/BNC and create your free BNC Pro account. And you have another chart from Brave New Coin. So this is, what is the, this is, the, oh, this is their new indicator about sentiment. Shout out, by the way, our friends at Wrecked Podcast, which is a funny podcast that has almost nothing to do with crypto, but they're just two nice guys that I like listening to their stuff. And they were, they actually talked about Brave New Coin's sentiment indicator launch and gave a shout out both to us and Brave New Coin during their episode. The sentiment indicator is a new thing. It's a chart on Brave New Coin. Do you have some inside knowledge on it, or else I can just kind of describe what you get from it?
So they've been like data scraping, or however you say that, data mining tweets on crypto stuff for a little while now. And you're going to see more of these infographics coming on various things, but they're able to like sort all these tweets into specific categories. So it's just showing like a heat map of what people are talking about for Bitcoin specifically.
And top is opinion.
Yeah, of course.
up 2.5% technical tweets. So this is me and you type of categories. About 23% of all tweets, and up almost 3%. Tweets all around are up.
So yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, it's not necessarily actionable from a trading perspective, but it's always cool to see sentiment. They have a halving sentiment thing coming too, so that'll be super cool.
I think it's useful though, especially for people that don't have some of their own ability to capture sentiment from, like, if they're getting more Twitter followers. Like you and I have significant followings, and you know, when you were getting like 1,000 followers a day in December 2017, there's some sentiment there that is a hint. And I see people talking about that sometimes, like people that have a profile, I guess, on crypto Twitter. They're like, have you been getting more followers, or have you been losing followers? And I think this kind of hardens that up a little bit to actually see tweets about the space and by category, see the activity of them. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, my personal following has been flat at 119,000 for the past year, at least.
Yeah, mine too. But so, whatever number I'm at, somewhere under 68, 69. my personal sentiment indicator was actually the day that Bitcoin slammed into the 200-day moving average. My neighbor asked me, he's like, hey, what's going on with crypto lately? And I was like, uh-oh, maybe a local top. But yeah. All right. Let's leave it there. Everybody go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check out Brave New Coin and sign up for BNC Pro. Get on the BNC Pro platform and track your portfolio just like Josh is doing with his highly profitable altcoin portfolio. And then Josh, everything, you're doing all your articles there, and then Carpe Noctem on YouTube with those corresponding videos, which have been really great. Thanks for joining me, and we will catch everybody next week. Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight, I can barely breathe.